Hi, guys. Just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, hello, my sweet friends. How are you guys? Welcome to my podcast. This is Nicole Sachs, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain. I hope this finds you well. Today, I have a really incredible real-time heal to share with you. I came in contact with Phil several weeks ago. He reached out to me and noticed that I had been calling out for more diversity in my real-time heal world, wanting to interview more men and wanting to interview more diverse people. And Phil is a transgender gay man, and he has a story to share. He had terrible chronic pain all over his body, is still working on recovering from that, but really has benefited from both Curable and my work and just needed an extra boost, as many people do. It's the reason for Real Time Heal. It's the reason I created it. And so he reached out to me, and I was thrilled to welcome him onto the podcast. So today we discuss the issues that we carry, the repressed issues that we carry. For Phil, of course, it was knowing his whole life that even though he was born a girl, that he was a boy. And that is something that all transgender people have to bury for many years often. So, of course, that creates a lot of TMS with a lot of repressed emotions. And so when he transitioned, he thought, well, that's it. You know, wipe your hands of it. Everything's fine now. And of course, that wasn't the case because he had the work to do, which he is now doing and doing incredibly well, I might add. So we talked a lot about acceptance. We talked a lot about patience and kindness, self-compassion, inner child work for even our older children. You know, we discussed a little bit of the fact that we have to go back for our 20-year-old child inside, maybe our 30-year-old child, depending on where we are on our journey. So it's a great interview, and I'm really looking forward to sharing it with you. And I wanted to also mention, because I know a lot of people are often asking me about Curable, and Curable is the way that Phil found me, that Curable sponsors this podcast. And although, you know, some people ask me, so I have to do Curable to do your work? No, you don't have to do Curable, but Curable is an incredible partner, a really, really great add-on when you've learned about my work and you want some more science-based information, some more guided meditations. Curable is used by over 100,000 people around the world with chronic pain. And I'm thrilled to have them because they're the first app to deliver evidence-based methods for chronic pain self-care. And as I often say on this podcast, I can't do this alone. You know, the fact that people have access to an app that they can tap into every day, helping them, guiding them through the pain science, through exercises designed to break the pain cycle, it's incredible. And not only that, they also have an online community. So I, of course, have my online community on Facebook called Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs. And a lot of people who are in my community also sign on to Curable's online community. And I've been on there, and I've seen a lot of the posts. It's really, really supportive. Over 70% of Curable users experience physical pain relief after only 30 days of use. And 80% of users report a higher quality of life. And of course, this doesn't surprise me at all because this work heals people. It's incredible. It's incredible to watch. So just so you know, that Curable, when they're sponsoring this podcast, offers my listeners 50% off an annual membership. 50% off. It's an incredibly generous offer. So if you want to take advantage of that, learn more about Curable, go to getcurable.com/Nicole. N-I-C-O-L-E, getcurable.com/Nicole to take advantage of that deal. All right. Well, I am not going to take too much more time. Just so you know, if you are new to the podcast and you want to learn about everything I do, if you might want to join us at my second online virtual retreat, September 18th through the 20th, if you want to learn more about the many free resources that I offer, just go to my website, www.thecureforchronicpain.com and click on the resources tab for all my information, and click on the retreats tab if you want to learn more about my online retreats. And then, of course, my in-person retreat next summer at the Omega Institute has already been set for August 1st through the 8th. So I'm missing it so much working with you guys in person. But you know what? We hit a bump in the road with COVID and we're carrying on virtually and excited for next summer when hopefully we will all be back in the swing. All right, my loves, enjoy this wonderful real-time heal. I hope it touches you in the heart. I hope that you can glean some important tips and inspiration for your own journey. And if you are enjoying this podcast, just jump over to iTunes and rate and review it. It really helps people find the podcast and help themselves. All right, loves, enjoy this interview with Phil. Hi, everybody. So I am here today with Phil, coming all the way from across the pond in the UK for a real-time heal. So welcome, Phil.
Hi, it's really good to be here.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming. Now, as in all the real-time heals, I really know almost nothing about Phil's story except for the introductory email. So Phil, I'm going to pass it off to you so you can tell us your story and we're going to see how I can help you today.
Okay, so I'll sort of start with the kind of history of the TMS symptoms that I now realise that I've had for a really long time. So going back probably like 20 years or more, I've had kind of on and off back pain, neck pain. I've had things painful like with my ankles, hip at various points, and kind of fairly typical sort of TMS story that I've, you know, seen my doctor occasionally, but more often I would kind of go privately to chiropractors or pay to see physiotherapists privately, because in the UK you have to wait ages to actually get a referral. So I always used to go and see somebody when I had the pain, because I knew that it would probably go away again if I waited. So that kind of started when I was in my early 20s, I think. I'm 49 now, and so that's something that's gone on for years. And looking back as well, I can see that I had other symptoms that were probably TMS, but at the time I didn't realize, you know, could have been that. So also kind of used to have a lot of coughs and colds and sort of like almost getting ill but not quite getting ill. A lot of anxiety. I was very anxious, like right from childhood. I was always an anxious child. And I also had like sort of mild eczema, psoriasis occasionally.
Yes, yep.
Had an episode of vertigo at one point that was like really, really bad. And then ever since then, I still get it occasionally, but not very often, but just every now and then that one will hit me. Had some palpitations and kind of mild IBS symptoms occasionally as well. But the pain is the one that has been the most problematic and the one that's bothered me the most over the years, because it's got kind of progressively more frequent to the point where eventually it became what I would consider to be chronic, and that it just, you know, there was no break between, it wasn't like isolated episodes, but it became constant. I would say, I suppose I count it becoming constant probably 5 years ago, but actually it may well have been constant before then, but not as bad. Like before that, it was probably a constant level sort of 2-3, whereas then it was more like 5-ish with a bit of 6 sometimes. So it was more obvious and more debilitating and more tiring, and I was more afraid of it and doing everything I could to try and find a solution, and typically failing, just getting worse. And also, so that was the thing that really flared up then, was neck and shoulder pain. And I thought it was due to an injury, although I'm now questioning that actually, because I had a lot of neck and shoulder tension even before I got like a much more intense pain in the joint of my shoulder. And at the time, the physio put it down to overtraining. I'd been doing a lot of circuit training, a lot of press ups, a lot of burpees, and there was like slight sort of, you know, presumably like ligament kind of stretching or damage at that joint. I now wonder whether it was actually the muscle tension that was putting the pressure on the joint more than the exercise itself. So
Phil, what was happening 5 years ago in your life when you felt like the pain went from a 2-3 to a 7-8 or whatever you said, like when it became really obvious, what was going on in your emotional world?
Yeah, well, there's a really, really obvious connection there, because that is when I was kind of, it was before, so I'm transgender and I identify as male now, but I was born presumed to be female. And I didn't realize for a really, really long time, because when I was a kid, people didn't really know about transgender people. It was something that was just like not understood and was so unusual to hear any sort of stories or, you know, any representation. So as a kid, although like in my heart, I knew that I should have been a boy, I should be a boy, I was a boy. I knew it in my heart, but I didn't know it in my head. I didn't have any understanding or any way of like articulating that. And then when I kind of hit puberty, I just forgot about it. I just shelved it. And it became, my narrative was like, oh, when I was a kid, I used to really want to be a boy. Like, isn't that funny? And I didn't really let myself think about it any more than that for a really long time. And so, yeah, 5 years ago was when I was full on questioning my gender and starting to think that I was going to have to do something about it. But I was terrified because I was happily married to a straight man, I've got two kids, you know, like my life on paper was really good, but there was all this stuff going on inside that was starting to come up to the surface. It was in my awareness by then, and I was questioning what I should do. So yeah, there's a very, very obvious connection, which is one of the reasons that I find it so easy to believe that I have TMS and to be very confident about that.
So do you want to talk about, I know a little bit about how you found me, but before we get into that part of the journey, do you want to talk about what it was like to tackle such a difficult thing, such an obviously challenging thing? Was your pain consistent through your transition, or was it better at times when you were tending to your emotional world more? I'm just curious.
It's hard to remember looking back, because at that stage I wasn't thinking of it in terms of TMS, so I wouldn't have necessarily noticed the connection between what was going on. But the pain was fairly constant and persistent. I don't remember having much sort of respite during that period, but it also moved around. So again, classic TMS. I started off with this supposed separated shoulder in my right shoulder injury, and that was kind of resolved itself, but the pain, the muscle pain persisted, the muscle pain and tension persisted after the joint had improved. And then it switched from the right side to the left side with no injury at that point. And I got the kind of those mirror symptoms, which I've heard is really common, which is just like, you know, it's so weird when you think about it, how your brain can do that. But that was basically what happened, is even the joint pain in the left, even though I hadn't really injured the left, and you know, the physio was like, well, you know, not really sure. But kind of, again, I just carried on with that route, doing all the exercises that I was told to do, because I'm a perfectionist and very driven. And so if a physio says, you know, do these things, then I do them, and you know, and it wasn't working. And so that was where the fear, you know, kicked in, and the kind of the frustration and the search for a solution.
So tell us about how it went. You are obviously at your wit's end, all these different symptoms moving through your body, morphing from one part of your body to another, which is so common and so normal. And if we think about brain science, it makes perfect sense, because if we're in sustained fight or flight and the only objective is to protect us from the greater predator, which is the repressed emotional world that is threatening to rise, it really doesn't matter where it comes out. The only objective of the nervous system is to protect you, and it will protect you in the most obvious place it can. So if you believed that you had a separated shoulder, and then for whatever reason that started getting better, it has to jump around, because in its perception, if you are to look to the point in your life where the repressed emotions are rising, to that world, you're going to die. Like we have to look at it so blatantly that the nervous system has the emotional functioning of a five-year-old. You know, things are black or white. You're either safe or you're in terrible danger. So it makes total sense. So as this was going on for you, tell me how you shifted from the total physical terrified fear model to maybe there's another way.
I think it took a while, because one thing I should probably mention is that it then became more of a whole body issue. So from the focus being in my sort of neck and shoulders, I then started to get pain in my arms and in my hands and wrists. And I started to get symptoms like tingling sensation, numbness, yeah. And I started to get nerve pain as well as muscle pain. So that was even more scary. So again, that was when I probably started to sort of Google and look for things. And I started to worry that I was developing fibromyalgia. And I didn't want a diagnosis. I deliberately didn't ask for a referral because I didn't think it would be helpful for me to have a diagnosis of something that traditional medicine says you can't fix. So that was when I started to try and try things which I thought might help, because I could already tell that I was making my pain worse. I knew that, without blaming myself, I knew that my focus on it wasn't helpful, and I knew that my stress wasn't helping. I could see that connection. I was already becoming aware of that. And I was listening to, I've been listening to quite a lot of kind of holistic health podcasts. So I already kind of believe very much in the mind-body connection, but I'd never come across it in relation to pain. I'd come across it in relation to other conditions more, but not to chronic pain. And so I was already doing, I'd started meditating, which I did find helpful. That helped to relieve my stress, which would then help me to sometimes relax more, and I would then notice that the pain would decrease. So I was already trying to do those things, but I was still afraid of injuring myself. I was still wary of exercising and doing certain things that I in the past had attributed to increasing the pain. And I was doing that kind of treating myself, you know, really carefully, walking on eggshells all the time.
Right.
And I started to accept, well, I'm 49 and actually maybe this is it. Maybe I just need to accept that I'm not going to be able to carry on running and I should stick to walking. And, you know, maybe I shouldn't try and lift more weights, because obviously, like, since I transitioned, I've been taking testosterone, and so I wanted to kind of be able to work out and build a bit of muscle to help, you know, help myself change, my body change in a way that, you know, I look more masculine. But I'd sort of start to accept, you know, okay, that maybe isn't the way that I can go, and I'll just have to deal with that. So I was kind of practicing acceptance then, but for all the wrong reasons. So
right, the opposite way.
And so the thing that was the game changer for me was I saw a really well-targeted advert from Curable on Instagram back at the beginning of May this year. So not that long ago, only just over a couple of months ago. And I saw the advert and straight away I was like, this is relevant to me. This is something I need to check out. So I signed up and started listening to the education stuff first of all, because that was the kind of seemed like the easiest thing to do. And I'm kind of a nerd anyway. I love science. I love I'm really interested in psychology and neurology, because I did a psychology degree, so that's kind of my thing anyway. So I started listening, and as soon as I started listening to the information on the app, but also the podcast, the Like Mind, Like Body podcast, as soon as I was listening to that, I would just, this is me. I know this is me. I didn't really have any doubt. But again, it's like, I know it in my head, but I still right. struggle to trust it in my body. So it's kind of like the opposite of being transgender as a kid.
Right. True.
I joined the Curable Facebook group, and I think I posted a question in there about the expressive writing and about how to access the emotions, because I was finding it difficult to dig deep enough, and somebody recommended journal speak, and so I thought, okay, well, I'll go and find out about that. So I read your book and I started listening to your podcast, and I've now worked my way through all but the last, I think I've got 2.5 episodes to go.
Wow.
And journal speak immediately. Well, I say immediately. At first, I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. That sounds, you know, that sounded quite challenging, like writing, you know, the really awful stuff that you kind of don't want to write and don't want to say. But I, being me, I tried it because I tend to throw myself into things. So I thought, well, you know, I'll give it a go. And I tried it. And it is really, really powerful. It's a really powerful way of working. And it's, you know, I'm sure that it's helping me already and that it will continue to help me. So
Phil, I know that, first of all, thank you so much for sharing that. That's really helpful. And I already have like 10 things categorized in my head that I want to say to you. But the first thing I want to ask you before that is, I know one thing I remember from your initial email to me is that you had said you were journal speaking in one session and you didn't even realize that you had really so much to talk about, and you found yourself really going there. Actually, I don't think it was your email. I think it might have been a post you put on my page. Is that true? Did you post recently on my page? I know it was something from
about,
you.
About 2 days ago, perhaps.
Yes.
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 Yeah, so that was probably the most sort of transformative, is, you know, really getting into the emotions experience that I've had. So that was after a month of doing journal speak. And I had had other sessions that were moving and that where I felt like I got in touch with the emotion, but those always felt harder, whereas this one, it just kind of happened and took me by surprise. It was after I'd had an argument with my partner, because we have quite a volatile relationship. But clearly the plus side of that is that when I'm triggered by something that's happened between us, then the emotions then are much closer to the surface. So I've taken to journaling whenever we have any sort of conflict. I try and go and journal about it straight away, because I know that it's going to be fertile ground for really getting into why I get upset when he acts a certain way or says a certain thing. So yeah, that day, it was kind of early in the morning and we'd had a disagreement, and I, my laptop just went blank again, but I think you saw that.
No, I hear you.
So yeah, so I got up and I actually started off by speaking journal speak aloud, which I do sometimes if I'm walking, because I'm lucky enough to live in a rural area with like lovely woods and fields and stuff. And I find that exercise helps when I'm feeling really awful. So sometimes I'll go and I will talk. I also have a dog, so sometimes I talk to the dog, but she was still asleep that morning, so I went on my own. So I walked through the fields, you know, kind of talking about all the stuff that was going on in my head. And I worked through like the initial anger, which is what had been triggered at first, because that's, anger is my go-to. That's the thing that usually comes out, especially in a conflict situation. But I've learnt through the work that I've been doing that beneath the anger is always fear. That's definitely the next layer down, almost always for me. But this time I kind of went through the fear and then got to the sadness. And sadness is one which I can sometimes access anyway, but it just went deeper this time than it had before. And I was, you know, really, really emotional and kind of had to pull it together a bit, because I was getting back towards home. And so I kind of got back to the house and I was still feeling, you know, crappy after all of that. So I decided to actually start writing it down. So I got my laptop out and started to do some journaling. So then I wrote for another 20 minutes, probably, about what I'd been talking to myself about. And again, kind of got to the end of that and was feeling calmer, but still really kind of still very stirred up by it. So I was like, okay, time for the loving kindness meditation, see if I can get myself, you know, back to a state where I'm going to be able to cope with, like, you know, being with people for the day. So I went to meditate in the garden, which I quite often do if it's quiet. But as soon as I started listening, I started with a meditation about acceptance, I think. And then I moved on to one, it might have been one about surrender. And all of it just, again, just took me right back to the sadness, because I was feeling just so awful. And so it was hearing those kind voices and the sort of, you know, kind of the way they do, the gentle way that the guided meditations speak to you, just made me just feel really awful and desperate again. So then I was like back upstairs listening to them and just letting it all come out, really. So just crying and just actually letting myself cry until I stopped rather than until I felt I should stop. And that was the bit that was different. It was a really long time since I'd let myself actually cry until I couldn't cry anymore.
I love that. I cannot tell you how hard I love this story, because what you're describing with such bravery is exactly what is going to heal you. And obviously not every time does it have to be so explosive and so huge and so monumental, but guys, everyone out there, this is the way it's done, because the reason you're sick, the reason you're suffering, the reason you're in pain is only one reason. That the nervous system thinks that morning that Phil had will kill you. It does, straight up. Your perception of your emotional world, and this is just the way we're wired, and I always say, listen, we're just seeking to evolve in real time with this work. The perception of your brain and your nervous system is that your repressed emotional world is more dangerous than what Phil just described that he did. And that is not true. And so what we need to understand about trying to do this work and taking it deeper is that as we allow, allowing is such a powerful word, because what Phil did was not like brain surgery. You know, this is the way it works. Like, you just allowed. And tell me how your body felt after, because that's another thing I remember at the end of your post.
Yeah, that was the thing, which again was just really beautiful in terms of proving to myself that I'm on the right path now, because I actually didn't notice until later in the day that my body was feeling so much better. And because I was feeling kind of wiped out emotionally and I was really tired because I'd woken up early and I was kind of being, you know, being gentle with myself. And then in the afternoon, I just suddenly realized that actually my body feels better than it has in a really long time. So there was less tension, because normally my muscles just feel constantly tight, like somewhere in my body, usually down on the left side mostly, but you know, that's kind of irrelevant where anyway, I guess. But it was just that realization that all that tension that's normally locked and making me feel kind of feelings of like pressure, like a band around my chest sometimes, or like sort of a rod down my back that's going up into my neck, it was just so much easier. It wasn't completely gone, but it was noticeably better, and that persisted for the whole of that day, which was wonderful, because I think I said in the post, it's like, you know, I know that recovery isn't a straight line, so I'm not expecting that it's gone forever, and that's fine. But just knowing that it can improve, and that it can improve when I'm doing this work, and that there is a connection, and it means that it makes it easier for me to trust the process.
Right. Right. And, you know, another thing that I want to explain to you and to everyone out there is that this, it's hard for me to explain the passion with which I feel when I say this. This process of your pain is so simple. It's so complex, because we're such complex people. And in a moment, Phil, I want to get to your complexity and why I think what I think you need to continue to focus on. But we're so complex as people, but the process by which we are no longer in pain physically is simple. The moment that your brain and your nervous system no longer deem you as being in danger, the pain signals just stop firing, which is what you experienced that day, Phil. Like your tension in your muscles and the spasming of the muscles that causes you to have symptoms, it just didn't fire that day, because you had taken such a ladle into your reservoir of rage and shame and sadness and fear and dumped it out, that it just wasn't causing the trigger of the normal everyday trigger that you get that says to your system, tense up, because we are safer focusing on that tension than we are on that bubbling vat of emotions that might just touch us. So just stay tense and we're good. And so, you know, what I want to inspire you with is to just say, like, this is exactly how it works. And I know this is a real-time heal, but like, you're kind of doing everything beautifully. but I do want to bring something up. So obviously living a life of a person who is transgender, who knows in his heart that something is off, and the amount of repression, even little bits and pieces, when somebody said, good girl, you know, something so innocuous,
yeah.
that must have required such repression, is something that just I would like you to treat really tenderly and with a tremendous amount of respect and patience. Because I think that that's just such an obvious space where you needed, like, just with the most survival mechanism you can imagine, to not feel the depth of how difficult that was, because it, you needed to survive as a girl. You know, you weren't going to be told that it was okay to be a boy. So the amount of repression necessary, and I want to say on top of that, probably the reason that you felt so resigned when you were trying to exercise and you were on the testosterone, trying to make your body more masculine, is like, this whole lifetime of need is finally somewhat being realized because you transitioned. And now the very thing that will make you finally feel good in your own skin is being taken from you because you didn't feel that you, your body could sustain the exercise. So there's just so much tenderness there. Like, I feel, I want you to tap into as much self-compassion as you can around that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Definitely. I think it's hard sometimes to look at that, and also even to look at my situation now. So even having transitioned and having kind of got to the point that I wanted to get to, there's still that loss of time. Like, I wouldn't do things differently because I don't want to wish away my children and stuff, but there's still that kind of, like, in a parallel universe, there might have been a me who worked out 20 years earlier and who had a very different experience. And also the kind of having to accept the limitations, you know, being transgender. I can never be a cisgender man. I can never know what that's like. I can never have that experience. I was socialized as female and fitted myself into the roles that other people expected of me for so long. And to kind of try to, like, let go of that and move on from that is, well, it's impossible. So it's that kind of balancing act of, like, I have no regrets about coming out and transitioning and being authentic and living authentically, but it's still not an easy road. You know, it still has a lot of challenges, and I still feel very self-conscious sometimes about what people are thinking of me, like how I'm being judged. I still occasionally get misgendered, which I find bizarre because, I mean, you can't actually see me here, but I've normally got, like, you know, a quarter of an inch of dark stubble on my chin, but occasionally somebody will still misgender me, usually maybe someone who's kind of someone like in a shop who might have seen me over the years and not in their head, like, reassigned my gender. And occasionally I'll have these just bizarre experiences where someone will call me madam or something, and I look in the mirror and I'm like, how? But I'm 5'2", so I'm really small, and I'm, you know, and I'm not big physically in other ways, and so, you know, I'm definitely not the most masculine man on the planet, and that's fine. I don't need to be, but it really messes with my head when I get misgendered or when I can see people kind of looking at me and thinking that there's something strange about me, and that makes me feel really self-conscious, and I think that's a big part of my kind of anxiety and sort of another source of the tension and stress that I need to kind of, you know, practice acceptance over and kindness to myself about.
Yes, the word acceptance was what kept echoing in my mind as you spoke, because well, the first thing I want to say is, have you ever done any grief work around what you just spoke of as the lost years, or the fact that you'll never be a cisgender male? Have you done grief work specifically around that?
I've definitely done some journal speak about those regrets, but I probably need to dive more deeply into that. I think I find it difficult because it's like trying to hold that parallel space of I don't wish I'd done things differently because then I wouldn't have had my kids, but I don't, at the same time, yeah, allowing for that grief. I think I find it quite hard to kind of hold those two alternate realities and allow myself to grieve for the other one.
Yeah, that's understandable. I'll help you in a way, or maybe it'll help you, to draw a parallel to something that I can relate to. So when I was drinking alcoholically when my children were young, and I got sober when they were 7, 9, and 13. And I've spent a lot of time allowing myself to grieve that in some ways I really missed their early childhood. You know, I was there, but I was there in a very different way than I'm there now over the past 5.5 years. And it has been helpful to not deny the grief, to not say, well, whatever, here we are, you know, things have changed. And so phew, you know, wipe the brow and move on. Like to really go back to that young woman who was 30 years old, overwhelmed with motherhood, using alcohol as a way to get through the day, having compassion for her, almost like an inner child work, but for myself, you know, 15 years ago. And it's been helpful because I think what we tend to do so much as human beings is we just want to dust ourselves off and been like, all right, what's done is done. Let's get on with it. It's better now. Look, I did it. You know, I transitioned. I'm here. You know, and I would say in terms of your healing that it will be really helpful and really kind and really loving for you to go back to that younger man and say, I see you. I see you. I see how hard it is for you. I see what you feel like you're missing. It's really, really lovely work.
Yeah, I think that would be a useful one to do. And yeah, you're absolutely right about the, you know, you want to just move on from grief, from loss. And that's definitely a pattern of mine in my life around other things as well. I'm not very good at doing grief. I'm not very good at allowing myself to experience loss when it happens. It tends to come up later because I'm too busy trying to move forward when it happens.
Right. And that's why I really, before I heard myself talking about acceptance and I'm like, no, Nicole, stop. Because first we need to talk about grief. Because acceptance is a huge tool in doing this work and coming to tremendous peace. But we don't want to step over grief in the process. And there's also, the name is escaping me at this moment, but there is, and I'll get it to you. There is an author that speaks so beautifully about grief. He was interviewed on Brené Brown's podcast toward the beginning of the quarantine regarding grief work. And probably people who are listening to this are screaming his name right now because they're like, Nicole, this, because I have spoken about his work on the podcast before, but I didn't know it was going to come up in this session. So I don't have it top of mind, but I really feel I think you'd benefit from looking into some literature on grief because grief is actually remarkably similar across situations. So this man lost his son. And he's also a researcher, and he speaks about that in terms of the loss of his son. But your loss of your identity for the years that you had to live in, you know, in that struggle, in that conflict, is it's going to make you relate. Like it'll feel so similar because loss is loss, and for each of us to acknowledge it and to gently hold that younger person in our hands and our arms and our hearts, and to try to kind of, it's almost like we're fragmented as people. We're fragmented because the parts of us that were inconvenient to integrate, we just said, go sit down, I'm walking on. We just left them behind. And so to reintegrate ourselves through this grief work, I think would be really helpful before you move on to acceptance. And it's also, like you said, it's parallel. So it's not really before in a timeline way. Like I don't want you to do the grief work and then we'll move to acceptance. But just know that sort of spiritually and energetically, the grief work is just existing one beat before we practice acceptance. Does that make sense? I know it's complicated.
No, it does. And it's no coincidence that it was the acceptance meditations that put me right back into the grief in a way that like,
right,
you need to do that first. So maybe that was perhaps, you know, coming up from my unconscious that the grief is really important and I need to allow myself to feel that loss. Because I have done some inner child work around being transgender. I did, in at least one of your other podcasts, probably more than one, where you've asked people to go back and do inner child work, where they say to themselves at various points, what do you want to tell me? What's it like to be you?
Right.
So I did that for to do with being trans, well, to do with other stuff as well. And that was really good. But I think going back and giving 20-year-old me a voice, or 25-year-old me a voice, or, you know, 30-year-old me who's, you know, got a newborn baby and, you know, is so immersed in all things kind of feminine and motherhood and breastfeeding and, you know, what was going on inside me then, like in the unconscious part, you know, that would be interesting to look into that, I think.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Some of my greatest inner child work has been with 30-year-old me, because in so many ways, as we're trying so hard to be parents, especially I find this oftentimes with parents, men and women, we have to sublimate our own needs so deeply that it's almost like we're still little kids, you know, because we're not getting our needs met. We're trying so hard to meet someone else's needs that little part of us is just so abandoned, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think I wanted that. That's one of the reasons I think by wanted children, which is a terrible reason to have children. Obviously, I love them, they're fantastic, but if I'm honest with myself, I think part of that was just that desperate. I wanted to stay on that conveyor belt of like being a wife and then being a mother, and then I didn't have to look at what was going on inside and what I really wanted, because it was easier that way. And I wanted to have more children, and it was my ex who was like, no, two is enough. And that was a huge loss for me that I couldn't go on to have another child. But I think for me, I was desperately trying to hide from what was going on inside. And if I had another newborn baby keeping me awake all night and another toddler running around and, you know, climbing over everything all the time, then I wouldn't have any time for me. And that was what I kind of wanted. I was trying to hide, I was trying to run away from everything.
And what a beautiful metaphor for TMS. You know, a baby is the perfect diversion. It's exactly like your baby. This is not your baby, but our babies are the same as shoulder pain.
Yeah.
They're just, right? They're just, they keep us out of ourselves. And I think that's why I find so many people come to me and my work in their 40s and 50s. It's probably my biggest demographic, because finally, at long last, you sort of hit a wall and you're like, damn, I need to look at myself now, you know?
You see, for me, I thought I'd done it. I thought being transgender was the thing. I was like, okay, that's it. I've sorted. There can't be anything else now. I've worked that out, so I'm going to be fine. And then it's like, well, hang on, why am I in pain all the time? What, you know, what's going on? Why am I getting so triggered by things all the time? You know, why am I still so insecure all the time? And then there's that sudden realization of, yeah, hang on, I'm never going to be done. There's always going to be work that needs doing. But I hadn't realized quite how much.
Well, you know, actually that statement brings us perfectly into talking about acceptance, because I love how you say it's never done. You know, it's always going to be this way. I can't tell you how much peace you give yourself. We all give ourselves when we just say, there's no finishing this. There's no wiping our hands of it and saying, now I'm going to just be at peace. And it's not supposed to be. You know, life is a messy process. And the reason we get to experience the kind of joy and connection that we get to experience as human beings is because of the dichotomy, is because we have suffered and we have seen the darkness. And so the light is so beautiful and so pure. And it's just the way it goes. So talk to me about what acceptance means to you, how you've been trying to practice it. If I recall from your email, you said that acceptance was something you were struggling with.
Yeah, I heard you recommend acceptance and surrender are the two sort of concepts that I've been really trying to look into. And they really speak to me. And I think it's something that I need to look at, because I'm a massive control freak. And I understand that control is driven by fear, that need to try to control. And I listened to your podcast about control is an illusion. And that also then really spoke to me. And I was like, yeah, it absolutely is, because you can't rush other people through stuff. So, I mean, without getting sort of too personal about someone other than myself, my partner is, he's younger than me, and he's very, very different to my ex. I kind of went for the complete opposite person. And he has his own challenges, which intersect with mine in a way that we sometimes trigger each other quite a lot, hence the conflict, which is, you know, good for journal speak, but kind of stressful in other ways. And so, you know, I have to be really careful. I'm trying to avoid codependency, like that, you know, I know that there is an element of that in our relationship, but we try to guard against it. And that he leans on me quite a lot for emotional support sometimes. And he's working on his stuff, which is great. And that, you know, as long as that's happening, then that's cool. I wouldn't want to be with someone who wasn't working on their own stuff.
Yeah, it's helpful. It's helpful.
But he has to do it in his own time. And he's very different to me. And there are some things that he's not really ready to work on yet. And I need to be accepting of that. If, you know, if we're going to be together, I need to accept that, and I need to allow him that space, and I need to stop trying to sort of control him. There's a difference between, you know, the difference between support and control, and sometimes I can definitely fall on the wrong side of that. I think I'm being supportive, but actually I'm not. I'm just being a control freak. And the thing I've realized is that sometimes when I'm being like too hard on him, like not necessarily to him, but in my head, is what I'm actually hearing is it's my own inner critic that's then being turned on him, and it's my dad, and that's what I'm hearing. And it's that kind of realization that this is a kind of a cycle that I can get into, and trying to be more mindful of that and working on that acceptance that, you know, my partner is how he is now, and he's working on it, but it's going to happen on his timeline, and it has to happen on his timeline, and he has to do it for himself and not to try to keep me happy. And so,
yeah,
will require, you know, acceptance and surrender and patience and kindness for both of us. So
one of the things I like to tell people, and I think I mentioned it recently on my Instagram. Do you go? Yes, you say you go on Instagram, right? Have you heard my IGTV series?
I haven't, and I need to look it up, because I do use Instagram, but I only really like post photos of my puppy on there and photos. I've never really looked at stories, and I don't even know how to find an Instagram TV thing. So I'm going to have to, you know, get Google that and work it out, because yeah, I definitely
see it. It's so much easier than you think. Just go to my profile. It's at Nicole Sachs, LCSW. Everyone should be going there because it's just free content. And when you get there, you just click on my profile, and the IGTV like icon is it's like my pictures. And then if you click on the next icon, it's my whole series, which will show you everyone I've ever recorded. And if you click on the next icon, it's people who tag me in. This is every profile is the same way. And so you'll be able to find it. Plus on my regular profile, if you just scroll down on my feed, I post every one of my IGTV episodes in my regular feed. So you could just find them as you scroll down. But I believe the most recent one, I could be wrong, but sometime recently, is making you your project. And that's what I'm feeling when you're talking right now, Phil, like making you your project. Yes, your partner has his journey. And I trust me, I understand that. My partner and I have our own journeys too, right? We're all just trying to freaking do this. But when you make you your project, and in every way, mind, body, and spirit, it really helps you slow down and realize, like, I'm controlling the only thing I can control, which is my behavior and my decision of what the next right considered action is for me. And it's so simple. You know, it's what do I need to do right now? Okay, I need to make my bed. All right, I'm going to make my bed, and I'm going to walk out of my room. Now, maybe in making my bed, this isn't true for me personally, but could be, feelings will come up, like, why doesn't he ever make the bed? Why doesn't he ever do anything? Why doesn't he ever blah, blah, blah? You know, like, this is what happens to us as human beings. We start to create meaning where there is no meaning, because that helps us to control other people. And we think it helps us to be powerful, which of course is an illusion. Mm-hmm. And so noticing that, noticing what it feels like, but going through the process of simply making the bed and then moving, what do I need to do now? I need to go downstairs and have some coffee. That's what I'm going to do. And just simple making you your project. You need to do your journal speak. Okay, I'm going to go into the garden. I'm going to do that now. It's amazing how much more peaceful you start to feel about other people's journeys, because you're not also angry at yourself for discarding your needs. And I think that control freaks, and I will totally, I will add myself to your list of control freaks, because I am. It's just TMS. It's just another diversion. It's just another way that we are not being present with ourselves because we think that would be too painful. When the truth is, if you just press the pause button and stick with you, and it doesn't mean you're being selfish, by the way, to make you your project. It's truly being selfless, because self-care is also other care. And that is something that I discussed on the IGTV series, because, you know, there's this old parable that in recovery, which is, if you're holding a cup of coffee and someone bumps you, coffee will spill out. And if you're holding a glass of red wine and someone bumps you, wine will spill out. And if you're holding water and someone bumps you, water will spill out. And the whole concept of that is that what we are carrying inside of us, right, our lack of self-care, if you will, is going to brew inside of us, and life is always going to bump us. So what do we want to be spilling out onto the other people that we spend time with? You know, do we want it to be pure? Do we want it to be water? Do we want it to be something that will do the least amount of damage? Or are we going to stain them with our coffee and our red wine or whatever else is inside of us that is clearly going to come out whenever we're bumped, and life is never going to stop bumping us? And so being able to be in that space of next right considered action and self-care allows for the best possible outcome for everyone. So that is definitely something that I think would help you to keep top of mind.
Yeah, that's a really good metaphor, and it's something that I have been kind of working on, but it takes a lot of habit changing. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And like, I've certainly in the past fallen into the trap of focusing on other people's needs, looking after other people and ignoring my own needs. And again, I think, you know, part of this relationship at the beginning was that he needed a lot of support, and it meant I didn't have to think about myself. I didn't have to think about what was going on for me. And I just, you know, I was moving on from my own, like, the loss of my marriage, which, you know, was devastating, but I didn't allow myself to grieve that at the time either. And I threw myself into a new relationship where I was with someone who wanted a lot of support. And it was great at first, because I was like, okay, I can do this. I get to be the strong one now. I get to be the one who's like supporting someone else, because with my ex, like, he always seemed very together and very adult, and I always felt like this mess. So I was like, okay, this is great. I get to like be the sorted one this time. But then of course, you know, that's not how it works. And then eventually the cracks started to show, and then I had to admit and realize that there was all this stuff going on that I needed to deal with. And, you know, I couldn't just carry on ignoring my own needs and trying to like be super supportive all the time. I had to make sure that I was meeting my needs as well and right after myself. So more and keeping going with that. But it's challenging, it's hard. You get into these habits, you fall into these habits, especially in relationships as well. And then, yeah, trying to step out of that is difficult.
And it is hard. It is hard, and I expect it to be hard. I think managing expectations in this process is really important, because if it took you 49 years to walk into the woods, you're not going to walk out in a few months. And so to just expect it to be what it is, to have tremendous compassion for everything that has happened. Of course you chose this relationship. That makes perfect sense. Compassion for you, compassion for your partner. Of course you guys came together in that way. Can you find a healthier way to walk together? Yes, you're doing that. So it's really about, that's where I think the acceptance is going to be the biggest thing for you, Phil, is to just realize it never could have gone any different than it went. This is the way it was going to go, no matter what. And acceptance and self-compassion. I know I mention her a lot, but Dr. Kristen Neff does beautiful work on self-compassion. Free meditations online to just really continue to come back to, this is what happened. Let's begin there. Let's begin there, and let's begin with acceptance of our moment. And then so much healing is possible from there. And I noticed that we're getting toward the end of our time. I want to make sure, are there any questions that we haven't covered that you have for me today, Phil?
I'm just trying to think if there's anything I was going to ask specifically. I mean, one thing that I'm a habit I'm trying to break, I'm not sure whether you'd have any tips for it. I can always ask on the Facebook group, actually, is that I have a bad habit when I'm in pain, when I'm in more pain than usual, I find it hard not to focus on it, not just consciously, but even unconsciously. So even if I'm trying to not think about it, I'll find myself kind of like massaging my neck or like stretching mm-hmm. my shoulders before I kind of realize that I'm doing it. And obviously that's giving my nervous system, you know, we're not okay messages. So it's really, I don't know if you or anyone else might have some tips for how to kind of get better at catching myself. But again, maybe it's just time and mindfulness.
I have tips. You will never hear from me, it's just time and mindfulness. Yeah. I'm all about living in the solution, and there are tips. The first tip for you when you start doing that, the first thing you need to do is remember that transformation begins with the radical acceptance of what is. So if you're physically hurting, instead of saying, oh, I shouldn't do that, I shouldn't rub my muscles, say, oh God, this is what happens. I just hurt and then I want to rub my muscles. This is what I do. Okay. So not fighting against the moment, not trying to be different than you are, starting that first moment of when you feel it, saying, well, if transformation begins with the radical acceptance of what is, I'm not going to start to transform this situation until I say, here we are again. I don't like how this feels. I'm tempted to massage, even letting yourself massage, but being so awake, being so aware in that first moment, and then deciding to press the pause button and make another decision. So I'll give you a real quick story. I've talked a lot lately, especially in my Instagram, about how I've been cycling a lot. I've been biking like probably 20 plus miles a day. And what I have found with my lovely body is I have gone through every biking related TMS symptom you could get. I got knee pain, and then I got back pain, and then I got this weird thing with my thumbs, and I know what's happening. It's like, I'm trying a new thing and my TMS is saying, ooh, okay, might we just have a problem here? So maybe trying this new thing will no longer be a new thing, because when you try a new thing, you get really perfectionistic, and then you start judging yourself. Am I making good enough time? You know, is this, you know, am I as strong on the path as the other guy who just passed me? You know, all that bullshit that I do to myself subconsciously and consciously. So my TMS is saying, hey girl, you need some help? Because we can just have pain enough that you stop doing this. And I say, thank you for sharing. I get why you're here. And every time I do that, the pain, first of all, goes away. And then the next day I'll get something else. And we have been going through this dance for about a month now, and it doesn't bother me. It's so, I have compassion. I have such love for my gentle nervous system. I say, oh, okay, we're doing that today. Sounds good. So the reason I want to bring it up is this thumb thing. So it's like, picture the way you would squeeze handlebars. So that joint where my thumb meets my hand, it hurts me now. That's my latest. And I am tempted to take my other hand and like massage it out. And as I'm doing that, I let myself do it for like a couple minutes, and I go, oh God, such a waste of time. All right. I get what I'm doing. I get that this is the place it's hurting today, just whatever. And it's like sort of that apathy that I try to help people understand, that however this goes, it's okay for me. And so what I say is, if this is going to hurt me today, that's fine. I'm not massaging it anymore, because that's like so against, like, so beside the point. And I kind of attend to it maybe 15, 20 minutes later, and I can't feel it anymore. And it's always just proof that this is simply TMS. Look to your TMS, look to your brain and your nervous system as you would a small, confused child. And if you can bring yourself to little Phil at 5, when he was so confused, you know, everyone's putting dresses on me and I know I'm a boy. What, yeah. Like, okay, you know, like this is weird, but okay, you know, and have such compassion for that little guy, because he's just trying, you know, he's just trying to do what he needs to do to get through the day. And your nervous system and your brain, when they send pain to you, are exactly the same. They're just trying. Like, aren't you safer with this pain? Because then we don't have to think about all that stuff, you know, it's better. Then you have to say, I hear you, love. I hear you. I get it. But that's actually not the truth. And so I'm going to help you know the truth, which is we're going to feel our feelings and then we're going to get on with our day and it's going to be all right.
Yeah, I'm getting better at it. It's definitely, it's a lot of habits to change, isn't it? But I am, and every time I do have that kind of experience where I do manage to kind of be more accepting and not hyper-focus on the pain, and then it goes. Then it is
exactly
another proof. It's another, and you know, and sometimes now it is almost amusing when, like you say, with your cycling story. Like I've had a few things like that since I've been doing this work, where something has flared up or something. I had like the other day where, you know, I think I said earlier on that most of my pain is normally on the left side of my body. So especially in my neck, shoulder, chest, back, hip, thigh, it's always on the left. But a couple of weeks ago, I just randomly had a day where I woke up and I was like, what the heck? Because like suddenly I had the pain was on the right side in my neck and in my back around my shoulder blade. And it was like, this is exactly where it normally is, but it's on the wrong side. And that actually just amused me because it was just so random.
Yeah.
And it was so beautiful because it was just that, again, that fantastic proof is there's no way that this can be physical for it to just switch overnight and then switch back again.
Right.
It's just, yeah, stuff like that. It's amusing now.
It is. It's amusing and it's so lovely. It's so lovely. And I want you to look to it as you would to a five-year-old and say, oh, look how you're trying, you know, but we're okay. We're okay. You know, so this has been so great. Phil, thank you so much for coming on and being brave to tell your story and helping so many people. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for making the time to talk to me. I really appreciate it, especially at the weekend because... You know, weekends are busy with family.
Oh, believe it or not, I work 7 days a week. So yeah.
But yeah, really good. Really good to talk to you in person. Thank you. And thank you so much for all the work that you do, because I'm so grateful to have found it. And I just think it's fantastic what you're doing. And yeah, keep spreading the word.
Well, you're very, very, very welcome. And I want you to know that for 2 months in, man, you are great. You're doing awesome. And just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. Do exactly what you're doing. Allow this to move in the natural place that it's going, which is forward. You know, as you allowed your grief the other day to come out, and then, you know, it was just such a natural process. If you just pull out the stops and allow your body to do this, you're going to be great.
Yeah, I really hope so. And I do. I believe it.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, hope you guys got a lot out of this. I know I did. And Real Times Heals are always so awesome and so impactful. So I hope you enjoyed it.
And just remember that our sponsor, Curable, is offering our listeners 50% off an annual membership. So just go to www.getcurable.com/Nicole. All right, guys. Have a wonderful week. This has been Real Time Heal at the Cure for Chronic Pain. See you next time. Bye-bye.